Thank you for tuning in and watching or listening to another episode of the Reforge Roundtable, a weekly podcast where we go through lots of the top gaming news stories all week long here on Reforge Radio. We do the rundown, and then we do a roundtable at the end of the week with my good friends 30 and So Gaming and Ginger Prime. Thanks for being here this week, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, it's already a pretty full week. I don't even know what we're going to do next week. We need to look at the schedule because there's a lot going on next week with Summer Game Fest. And will we be able to do our own little rundown on that Friday? Will it be able to fit? I'm not actually sure. I haven't looked at the time because we are going to be trying to cover that as much as we can because next week is the 10th. And it looks like Tribeca Games goes live at the same time as us, so we may not be able to do a show next week. But there's already things happening this week that are worth talking about. We each sort of take a topic and do our own, I guess, sort of segment. And so I'm going to be talking about Diablo Immortal, getting the guys' thoughts on it and my thoughts on it. Chat, feel free to obviously interact. Then we're going to be talking about Final Fantasy 16. I know Ginger's super probably excited about that. That trailer last night was pretty hot. And then speaking of not so hot, the Sonic Frontiers game is what Mike's going to pick up. If we have time, we will talk about Sonic. We will talk about the pleasant surprise of Spider-Man coming to PC. What is happening? As well as some other titles coming to PC from some of the leaks that we're seeing. So let's just kick it off with Diablo Immortal. And for those of you that are in a live audience, we try to pull those comments in. Make sure to press like and all of those buttons. So I played Diablo Immortal this week twice. I played it on my iPad. I synced up my PlayStation 5 controller with my iPad, which was great. Really changes the experience, I think. I'm not a huge fan of the thumb controls. I've been told the thumb controls are totally fine if you have to play that way on the go. And put in a couple hours there on mobile, on the iPad. Your character is cross-progression because it's all on the Battle.net server. So I logged in on PC the next day. Similarly, they're just randomly letting people in. So we got in like 45 minutes early on Thursday, and we got in a whole day early on mobile. We're not really sure why they did that, but they did. And I had a perfectly fine time. I think the content loop is very enjoyable. I think it's a super accessible game. The way that they've streamlined so much, there's a lot of thoughtlessness to it in a good way, where you're just like, hey, a green arrow, click, put that on, and your character changes. And there's a battle pass that I thought was reasonably priced, and the dungeons and the combat feels good. It doesn't feel like it's going to be particularly challenging for hardcore PC players because they have to kind of build around the speed of mobile reflexes. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very good game. I thought that the graphics were very good for a mobile game. Very accessible. The content loop, I lost track of time. I think that's always the best testimony of a content loop, is you lose track of time. Like, oh my goodness, I've been playing for a couple of hours. And I told people, I am well aware of the pay to win. We did a video earlier this week about the pay to win aspects. Yeah, we reacted to Asmongold's video. And I'm not going to beat around the bush. It's crazy, crazy pay to win. But I could picture myself never being bothered by it, playing totally free, spending minimal money, right? $5 for that battle pass, and just grinding when I feel like it, And we had good enough support the 2 days we streamed it. It might be worth playing infrequently. It could be that MMORPG built for me, built for the more mid lane, more casual player. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on it, because that's the big conundrum in question, is can you play and support a game with your interaction with it, your streaming of it, buying a battle pass, I put money into this ecosystem. Can you do that? Can obviously members of the audience, can you do that while also being like, my gosh, it is unashamedly pay to win if you want to get into the PvP,
Yeah. I've got a lot of really strong thoughts on that, and I'm going to both, I guess, endear myself to this community and then kind of like cut them out from under the legs in the same sentence, because there's, as a parent, as a dad, I do not let my kids participate in pay to win games, loot box games. Like, I have them avoid that at all costs. In fact, if they're ever playing a game and it prompts them to spend money, that game gets deleted. I think that's something that I, as an adult parent over kids, have that role. Now, if you came to me and said, is this game, you know, pay to win, et cetera, I have no control over you, and nor do you want me to. Like, it's your money, it's your life. Just understand the relationship that you're going to step into. I don't have any problem with a free-to-play, pay-to-win game because they don't get my money. And I typically will just kind of play around with it and move on. And if I choose to support it, that's my choice. And so, like, I get a lot of hate online because of that stance. It's like, listen, if we're talking about, like, kids, I'm absolutely 100% on board. But we're talking typically, and when I go look at my community stats, I'm talking to adults that it goes, listen, don't give them money. Like, if you can't control yourself and your spending, like, you know, like maybe you have a gambling addiction. Okay. Yeah. Like maybe then we got to just sit in here and say, listen, don't step into this. I know a guy, you know, he's got a gambling problem, and I, you know, just avoid those kind of games because they're going to plague on you and they're going to do that. But if you have, you know, individual personal responsibility, you have control over who you are as a human being. Then I think stepping into a game like this, playing it for a little bit, stepping away if you don't want to, like, that's your choice. And as many people rage about pay to win, then you just go look at the numbers and you're like, well, clearly all the people saying that pay to win's awful and, you know, like, we're not going to support it is like a grain of sand yelling at the entire Milky Way in terms of, like, generally speaking, the majority of gamers, they're just like, I'm just going to play it for a little bit. Maybe I'll toss them $5 and then maybe I move on with my day. And so while those are the silent, you know, minority, you obviously see the online reaction being visceral. So I just kind of approached it from a parent perspective and be like, hell no. But then me as an adult, like, they're not going to get my money. I can, my wife will murder me. Like, how much did you spend on that free to play game, Brian? That, like, oh,
that's
my God.
The real reason you're not paying him money. It's because of your wife, not because you don't want to give him money.
She sees all the transactions. She sees those transactions. What do you think, 30?
Yeah. Well, I 100% agree with what everything that you just said there, right? Because as an adult and as a parent, playing games my whole life, and now the industry has changed to where every time you turn on a mobile game, like, the whole chat could just say it's a mobile game. And you're like, oh, well, it's microtransactions. Like, that's a thing, right? Like, the first thing in your head, it's a mobile game. Oh, it's going to have microtransactions, right? And we've been conditioned over the last 10, 15 years. And someone in my chat yesterday said, well, all mobile games are microtransactions. I said, no. When mobile games first started, I used to play Snake on my phone, and that thing was free, right? It came with the phone, right? That's what it is. Right. We've come a long way from those times. And there are games that are full-fledged price games. Like, if you go to the Apple Store or the Android Store, you could pay $10, $15 for a full-fledged mobile game with no microtransactions. You know, it's a game. Mm-hmm. I don't like, as a parent, where this is predatory. It is. It's predatory straight up. And it's also, if it's a gambling game with... It's like a slot machine, right? You know, when you go to a game, when you go to a casino now, these slot machines are not just ding, ding, ding. There's like these TV screens above it. And there's like these interactive video games while you're playing a slot machine. So when you get like 3 sevens, it moves your character and it does a whole bunch of stuff. It does extra things because that's the endorphins are going off in your brain because you're like, oh, this is pretty, pretty fun and addictive, right? And what Lono said, the game is 100%. It's a fun game. I'm playing it on my mobile device. It feels good playing it. When the gear drops, you're like, oh man, this is good. You level it up. I'm level 23, right? I'm playing it casually and it feels good. And my biggest discrepancy with the whole thing is I don't like games like this. And the reason I play it is because I am a content creator. I want to talk about it because I don't want to talk about something I don't know. And right. I've been playing and knowing about it and playing it. And it comes across as a hypocrite because I don't ever pay microtransactions for these games. But if you do enjoy it, like you said, right? And let's say I got through the season pass and it's a free-to-play game. I'm like, hey, you know what? Gave me 20 hours of time. I'll throw them $5. I'll throw them $8, $10, whatever the thing is, right? And like you said, each their own, right? Spend the money how you want if you're an adult and you make your choices. But let's be honest, it's not all about adults playing this game. Video games are played by children all across the place, and they don't know the difference because they're just like, oh, well, I just need this one gem, and this gem comes in, and, oh, it's only 99 cents. And then all of a sudden, it's $1.99, and then all of a sudden, it's $3. And you're being a stat to these companies. And my biggest problem with this is if this game is going to be successful, which it is, it's going to be very successful, it's going to be very, very lucrative for them, this is now going to be the standard of the next game. Because if you look a couple years ago on the mobile, Genshin Impact came out and you're like, wow, that game looks beautiful. That's a beautiful, full-fledged, like Breath of the Wild type game. And that's a gacha game, right? And then there's like Black Desert Online. Now you have Marvel Future Revolution. You have more games that are coming out that look fantastic on a mobile phone. Your phone's on fire, by the way, because it's the graphics are so goddamn great. But the problem is, this is a small section of the video game industry right now. Like you're at the beginning of the industry on the mobile phones, where games are being blurred between what's a real console game and what's a mobile game. And if this is successful and Overwatch comes out, it's on mobile, and Apex Legends is on mobile, and Call of Duty is on mobile, and all these mobile games are out there, it starts to blur that line. And then companies start to make games like this instead of games that they used to make, which was pay full price, pay a lower price, whatever, and you have the entire game there. Now it's, well, it's free, it looks beautiful, and it's just nickeling, diming you all the way. And soon this will be the standard. This is not going to be the
minority. I'm surprised it's not. I'm surprised we're already not there, because when you fundamentally just look at the numbers, you're looking at hundreds of millions, if not like, you know, hundreds of billions. Like, it's like, it's an obscene amount that also from the level of investment, I'm just like, I'm happy we get games like Elden Ring. I'm thrilled that that still is a thing because of just how lucrative this is. And when you actually realize it, it's one of the things that you're like, gaming used to be this niche thing, and then it exploded in popularity, and then it even exploded more when mobile came onto the scene, because now we're also not talking about just like North America and Korea and Japan and, you know, like in Europe. We were actually talking about like India's coming online. You have China coming online, and they're coming online not having consoles as that kind of, you know, be like that introduction to gaming. It's all mobile. And that's essentially kind of the model of, it's free. You don't have like a built-in nostalgia or built-in view of how it used to be. Now, one thing I do want to say about Diablo Immortal, though, in terms of like y'all both played on mobile, I don't like playing mobile games. Like, I don't like it, but that's where my frustration with the announcement was, is like, well, why not also release it on PC? Like Fortnite. Fortnite, I think, changed that kind of game. Genshin Impact follows it up with massively successful PC mobile. And then Diablo, basically, they realized people are just going to run it in BlueStacks anyway. Why not just have its own version? It's in beta. And the controller play on beta is awful on PC. So I went and played it. I was just like, this is just driving me nuts. It's this crazy lag, really bad. Like, you would actually try to move like even the cursor and it just wouldn't respond. And then eventually it would and try to catch itself up. Moving to keyboard and mouse was oh, that's so much better. But that's where another thing is, I was like, it is the beta PC. And so I actually even installed it on Steam Deck. I've had a couple of problems. I'm still troubleshooting it in that regards. And so, like, from my perspective, like, Diablo needs to exist on mobile. Like, when Mario wasn't on mobile, I'd go, that's going to be a real problem for Nintendo in 10, 15 years, when all of a sudden the next generation's coming, you know, like coming into adulthood and they've never heard of Mario because they didn't have a console. You know, it's like, you want to have representation, and Diablo, I think, as both an ARPG and a brand, should be there, because people are worried that the Diablo Immortal will have an impact on Diablo 4. I don't see them going that route. They could. I mean, that worse things have happened. But, you know, I don't see them necessarily going that route, because they do know that D4 is kind of their PC targeting gaming audience. And I have hope for that as a franchise. But we'll have to wait and see. They could look at the numbers. Diablo Immortal could bring in, 1,000 times as much as any standalone Diablo game. And then they might just be like, all right,
why make Diablo 4?
Well, I mean, make Diablo 4, but then why not have
what I'm saying, though, is this makes a ton of money, why even make Diablo 4, right?
Turns out, we announced that. That's, you know, it's eventually coming. What do you think, Lona, about what we said?
Yeah, that was a concern that came up last week, I think. It might have come up Monday when we were talking about the pay to win, is that the effort that goes into the mobile games can be, at some level, it can be significantly less than the effort into like a fully fledged AAA game. So with lower effort and lower bandwidth and resources and the payout being significantly higher, that's the concern people have, is that you're going to start to see a shift in priority. Companies are going to say, hey, let's try this out, which is what Blizzard's doing. We're going to try it out. And once they start to see the dollar signs, could they start to siphon support and future focus over to mobile? Because it's hard to fault a company for looking at the industry and not saying, hey, that's where the largest user base is. That's where the biggest spenders are. Let's go over there. Yeah.
You know, less drama. Like, oh yeah, some gamers are mad on YouTube and Twitch about whatever.
Right.
But the numbers just easily like, oh, you know, we upset $20 and $20 is yelling at $1 trillion. And they're like, all right, I don't even, does anybody hear anybody mad? I don't, I just hear money.
Real quick. Paul's Gaming says, you know, Diablo 3 was the biggest selling PC of all time. That's why you make D4. Well, I hate to break it to you. D4 is not D3. We don't know if it's going to be a better game than D3. Second of all, 30 million people pre-registered to play Diablo Immortal. Okay. How many people bought Diablo 3 on day one? It wasn't 30 million people that could potentially give them hundreds of dollars seconds within the game. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. there's a huge difference between a mobile game that's making billions of dollars. Not saying that Immortal is right now, but there's a difference between a game that potentially they want the giga whales, right? They want the mega whales, the krakens, whatever you want to call them, to spend that money. And this Diablo Immortal, if it's good, like it is, it just came out, is going to make way more money than if they bring a full-fledged $60 game out with microtransactions.
Have either of you guys played Diablo 4 yet?
No.
Having played Diablo 4, being the only person on the panel, I can say it is better than Diablo 3. Like, oh, it's incredible.
I hear it's fantastic.
Oh, it's...
Yeah, it the point though is if this makes $1 billion and then Immortal comes out and they sell 8 million copies, 10 million copies, whatever, Immortal's making more money for them, and that's what the shareholders and businesses care about.
Yeah, well, the hope would be that also that even with that money that they can then say, hey, yeah, we can go ahead and invest also in this aspect too. But go ahead, Lona. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. I think Wheezy brings up a good point in chat. Remember, Fortnite saved the world. It died for Fortnite Battle Royale. So it's not unprecedented for a company to say, holy moly, this thing over here is printing money hand over fist. I mean, they didn't just sacrifice Fortnite Save the World. They shut down Paragon so they could get the servers. They wanted those servers because they needed them. And again, as frustrating as that might be for people who loved Paragon or Save the World, faulting a company for going where they're making money would be, I mean, imagine running your own business and, you know, you're selling these little trinket cards that are just a hot commodity and they're hitting such a high level of demand that you would shut down all your other engines and all your other funnels of work if that was becoming such a dominating force, because you're trying to maximize profit, you know?
Yeah. Look, there's no Grand Theft Auto 6 yet because Grand Theft Auto 5 is making a crap ton of money. There's no Elder Scrolls 6 yet because Elden Scrolls Online, you know, ESO Online is making a crap ton of money. These things are facts, right? This is why you're not getting sequels. Even crappy movies, when they're really popular, if it's a bad movie but everyone goes to see it, it makes $500 million. Guess what? There's a sequel coming because it made $500 million.
What I would be interesting to see, because this is where I kind of see the industry going, and I obviously, like, I know I sound like a crack pot sometimes or a crackhead, but essentially when we start talking about the blending of kind of the mobile and the PC environment, I see cloud as kind of also a great way to bridge that. You literally as a developer can release one version, it can run on mobile, which when you have G5 internet, people can just play those games and have that same kind of experience that they would if they weren't streaming it. And then you have like the obviously local, you know, a localized version of itself. And so really what I'm getting at is that I still think that they'll come out with obviously Diablo 4, regardless of even if Immortal's just printing, you know, so much money, because I think essentially that kind of also would feed that. Like all of a sudden you're like, yeah, assume I see chat saying, like, imagine them selling 10 million units in one day. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, especially with the hype off of Immortal. And then you might be like, hey, want to take your, you know, you want to have that a better experience over here. But I could honestly see it if the Immortal is so successful, it actually just changes the business model of Diablo 4, you know, rather than sit here and say like, oh, why would we put a gate up of 60 when we can let you in and gain 800? And that's what I think a lot of what people see with the free-to-play model is that it just says, hey, all are welcome. And, you know, better, the best case for this, I think, outside of Diablo Immortal, would be Lost Ark. Lost Ark, regardless of its bots, is crushing in Steam and crushing in revenue. Like, it is just dominating, both as an MMO and an ARPG. And that's essentially what I see their competition as. Not Immortal, but I see, like, if they were going to do Diablo 4, what is the best one-to-one case scenario? Not for the informed gamer, but for the casual gamer. When you look at, oh, both are ARPGs, this one's free, and it's got all this content, and this one's going to ask me for $60. What am I going to...
Yeah, and microtransactions. And microtransactions on top of that.
Probably even microtransactions in four. Like,
That's what I'm saying. $60 with the microtransactions.
I was like, no. I think we're seeing the industry massively. And I'm just surprised it's taken this long, honestly.
Now, Akuta Papa says in the Discord that the Diablo Immortal on PC is just a basic port, but it needs work, resolution changes, HDR support, and more. And I didn't have... The only issue I had was... In menus with the cursor, I would just reach down and grab my mouse. It was just like, this is a nightmare with controller. It was too loose. But moving around and fighting, the only thing I had was periodically my right trigger like wasn't proccing my attack. Like there was some input dropping or something. I wasn't having input lag or anything like that. I would think that they'll probably do that later on down the line, you know, because this was something I think they... somewhat slapped together because the consistent response from the community playing the betas and the tech tests were like, please give us this on PC. This has got good pieces to it, and we would love to be able to play it on PC. I don't think Diablo 4 is going to get shuttered, but I could certainly I certainly agree that the post content strategy could very, very much change if Immortal is just raining cash from the skies. And you know, Diablo 4 quantity of sales is great because you get to multiply that by the 60. That's great. But then ongoing, you have to think about the dramatic differences between the two. And a day and then a week and then a month of Immortal could be just nosebleed money, and 4 might not be set up in any respect for an ongoing spending culture.
Right. And then being that it's still a online, you know, semi-online, however they structure it, because there is a shared kind of aspect that from 4 that you already experienced, where you can have a single player, you know, aspect, but there's also that shared open world, and almost kind of in a way like Destiny and how they kind of structure their, you know, online kind of that shared world shooter aspect. And so at its core, I think it's going to be really interesting, especially the next time we see Diablo 4. Being that it could, they've had a couple of restarts and some issues, obviously, with the company. Nobody, if that's breaking news for you guys, welcome to 2021. But the at its core, I'm really, really quite interested to see what the next iteration, what they choose to reveal, and who knows when that's going to be.
My look, I think Immortal for a game is a lot of fun, just as a game. Now, my two gripes with it are two minor gripes. One, when you're playing on mobile, sometimes when you're not looking, you know, your thumb will slide up because the thumb stick on the left side kind of moves wherever you place your thumb down. So sometimes you bump into your quest line up above when you're moving, or it changes your quest while you're fighting or whatever, and which is a very minute. And the other one is the camera. The camera is the big breaker, deal breaker for me. It's too close. And I they probably do this. Me and Lona were just talking before. He said maybe because of, the graphics, maybe it's too intensive. Maybe that's why they had to put it closer. Half the time I'm fighting bosses, like the boss is halfway off the screen, you know what I mean, on mobile, because they're big guys. And to me, I want to see what they made, right? And so you have to get like right up on them to see them, and then they walk away, and then they're off the cut off the screen. I just wish you had just a little bit of field of view where you could pull it back just a little bit farther. But that's my two little gripes. Otherwise, I think the game is a fun game, minus the, you know, the gambling aspects of it.
There were a couple of times where there were AoE attacks that I knew were coming, and I didn't feel like I could get away, because you don't have like a universal a dodge.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I feel like there should be a dodge, because I love the potions on cooldown. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for just streamlining that. You get 3 and they replenish. I think a dodge would be very, very helpful for some of those fights. I never died, but it was just a little pesky to be like, I know the attack's coming, and if it's one of the ones that kind of knocks you up and knocks you down, it's kind of irritating to be like, as soon as I saw it coming, I tried to get away and could not. There's literally not enough time. I think the Demon Hunter has something that lets them get away. but there's nothing universal. I believe Diablo 4 has implemented something like that, where you have like a dodge that
Diablo 3 had that as well.
Yeah,
which was really nice. I love that's one of the things when playing on PC on controller, I'm used to using the right stick as that kind of dodge, and I don't have it, so I've been finding myself constantly going to that and then getting hit by something because it's like, oh yeah, that's right, it's not in this version.
Yeah. So that's my thoughts. That's your guys' thoughts. We all seem to be very much in agreement that the game is very much worth playing. Some tweaks on PC would be nice, and it's certainly it's funny that it's like the nicest and most praised I think anybody's ever been about a pay to win game. Like it's too fun and it's free, so we're all kind of like eh. Like, and I know that people are gonna see that as like the downfall, but to me it's like if I stuck to my guns and didn't play it or touch it, that seems like that's not going to do anything. It feels like a wasted stance and a wasted ideology. I get why people might think that and would push for maybe content creators to be a little bit more firm in their stance on it, but I don't know. I don't feel like that would do anything. So
yeah, it doesn't.
But I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it doesn't. Like that's the myth, that there's a belief system that like, oh, all we have to do is just get this one person to not play and there's going to be a domino effect, when really the opposite in and of itself is happening outside of content creation as well. Like when you consider it, like when you go look at like, hey, how many copies of Madden get sold every year and FIFA gets sold every year? Like how many people are mad about that? Okay, you got, you know, maybe 100 people online on Twitter upset compared to the 30 million that just buy that game every single year. And so it's, you know, it's, you might be loud, and I agree, like the frustration of pay to win, that's why it's like I'm gonna kneecap people. But the reality of the situation is that you have to convince people who just generally like, listen, okay, who cares if it's pay to win? I just wanted something to take a break from the day. I'm just gonna play it, and I'm either gonna choose to spend the money or not. Like it in and of itself is just, I think the idea that people are going to convince this model is not good. They're hopeful, and I'm like, oh man, I've got bad news. I only have bad news for you.
I watched a couple of content creators that do Diablo, like they do mobile games and stuff, and their problem, they said it themselves, they're like, man, I really hate that this is predatory and there's so much to spend and it's gonna be six figures just to get to the, and but they're like, but I really like Diablo, so I can't stop playing, right? And that coming out of their mouth is like, well, you're addicted to the game, right? Like you love it so much, it doesn't matter what they do, and this is what they're banking on, right? They're banking on you going, well, just a little bit. Let me just put a little bit of time into it. Because look, I play Marvel Future Revolution. I'm a complete free-to-play player in Marvel Future Revolution. It's a Marvel mobile game, and I didn't pay anything. And I put about, I don't know, I gotta say about 600 hours, 700 hours into this game on mobile, right? But I know myself that I'm not going to spend anything, but I'm having time. But I also know that I'm never going to get the top gear to compete against people in the PvP section. So I just play it for the story and when they bring in a new character and whatnot. I know where I am in the realm of the game. I'm not going to try to compete with anybody and spend thousands of dollars because, like you, my wife would kill me if I spent thousands of dollars on a digital thing that you don't have anything to substance afterwards.
Right. Know thyself, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The way I just sort of thought about this and the way that I would phrase it is I can completely avoid it, you know, call it a name, and then in 2 weeks we're never talking about it again. I can obviously play it and become a whale. I'm not going to do that. I do think the middle road is I'm going to play it. I'm going to be honest about it. I'm going to draw people's attention to the fact that it's pay to win, which will consistently sort of alert people to like, hey, you know, don't give in to this aspect of the game, you know, unless you feel like you can. I guess if you're just independently wealthy and you want to throw money at the game. But I do feel like the middle road is at least letting people know the facts and the truth about it while not supporting those particular aspects. Now, the concern would be is that all of those data points, all of us free-to-play players are great data points for them to measure and analyze how to get a little bit more from those types of players. So that would be the concern is, you know, just how sinister can this tango become? And I guess I would just have to hope and have the faith that they're not going to go further than what they already know works. Like, they're not going to target me and try and, like, basically edge me out of the game and make it unenjoyable. That would be my biggest concern is, are they going to target those free-to-play players and say, there's X number of percentage of players in this demographic and time, and if we do these tweaks to, you know, earn rates and drop rates, they're going to start to feel that it's pointless to play, so either their engagement will go down or their spending will go up. That would be the big concern, is that they will start to do what I call the art of the squeeze, where they squeeze the player and see just how far, and then your investments sort of pitted against you. You're like, well, I've been playing the game for weeks and they've made this update, my gosh. That'll be when I'll throw a flag on the field and say, hang on, this is a foul move here. I came in eyes wide open. You're changing the rules, you know, down the road. That's a lingering concern that I do have.
That's, I think, where a lot of the frustration is. And it's like I said, know thyself, know what you're stepping into with any video game. I mean, look at Call of Duty. Like, they would be like, hey, here's our review, here's our game. Oh, this isn't so bad. And then, like, 2 weeks after, then it's like, here's our battle pass, here's our, you know, microtransactions. They specifically didn't put in on launch day, and they came in, you know, and it's like, yeah, you change the relationship. Like, you saying, this is what we're going to be. And, you know, and then as long as you're aware of what you're stepping into, I don't personally then as an adult don't have a problem with it. But like I said, kids, I'm just gonna be like, no, I've actually talked to parents who've, like, their kids have spent $600 or $800 like on Fortnite and all this stuff. And it's like, all right, let's talk about how we can not have that happen. I believe education is the way forward. But when a company changes the relationship of that business model, okay, that's when, like, wait a minute. Like, you said it was a free-to-play game with microtransactions. All right, now you're changing up that relationship. Or buy, like, when it goes from a buy-to-play game, like a $60, imagine that. Diablo 4 comes out, $60, and then within a couple of months or a year, then it's free. It's like, wait a minute. Like, all right, like, why did that happen? And that's where I personally go. That's where I maybe dip out. That's when I'm like, all right, y'all are changing too much of it. We all agreed that this was the relationship, and now you're changing the relationship. I'm not, yeah, typically happy with that.
Well, you just said something interesting. If you paid $60 and then it goes free later on, I mean, that's basically what's happening with at least Xbox players, where certain games come out full price and then all of a sudden they're on Game Pass. So what's your stance on that then? I mean
that's why I don't buy games. Like, with Game Pass, I just wait. Okay. And then ultimately it ends up being where it either comes to Game Pass or I end up forgetting about it and moving on.
Okay.
Unless I really absolutely love this series. So Final Fantasy XI, I think, came to Game Pass. Didn't care, bought it anyway because I wanted to support that game because I love, Dragon Quest, because I love that franchise. And so I was like, absolutely, I'm going to go ahead because I want to support that game and that mindset. So that's where I was putting my money, even though I did get it free with Game Pass, didn't care. So there's rare exceptions. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all, like, you know, drug addicts for video games.
Real quick, Crispy, you got to make sure you listen to the whole conversation. When I said I played 600 hours for a game, I also said in the very beginning of this conversation that if I played a game that long, it was free to play, and I threw money at them for the season pass. You gotta watch out for the whole conversation, not just the parts that you want to call me out on.
Yeah, and those consumer protection laws aren't going to happen unless gamers organize essentially a consumer group. No current like industry, we do not have any actually representation. The ESRB does not represent us. The industry doesn't represent us. Congress and the government. I know this is a global podcast, so
it's going to happen. Individual
government. But yeah, I've actually tried to, like, when you go look at it, to what is called a consumer advocacy group. That's what gaming needs. It needs somebody to sit at the table, and that's large enough. But gamers at the moment, being how divided gamers are, especially on this opinion alone, there hasn't been any movement or any kind of actual people who care. So if you want that, be prepared that it's going to be an uphill battle, and I'm happy to join you in that fight. I think having a seat at the table to represent fair practices would be great, but right now nobody gives a crap about it.
Right.
Yeah, well, and you know, somebody saying, you know, once you get far enough and you're going for legendary gems, you're gonna pay up or bail. That is the true test, you know. Are we going to get to the end game and feel like, well, the end game is just, it's designed to squeeze you, and then you're going to feel that temptation to say, I've invested all this time, and that is the concern, is what can I enjoy it up to that point, and would starting over or starting a new character or whatever, or, you know, putting the game down, would that feel satisfactory? And I think at that point, the thing to remember would be that I didn't spend any money at all. You know, I spent time, and I think that's where the snag is for some people. That's mm-hmm. where sunk cost starts to, you know, kind of lie to your brain and say, ooh, you better spend some money. You know, you spent all this time loving your character, and to walk away would just be such a bummer, you know? And I think that's going to be the question, is how many people feel that way when they get to that point. So that let's move on, though. I think that was good. That's a good discussion about Diablo Immortal, and, you know, we'll talk about it as it develops. But Ginger, I know last night during Sony State of Play, I was kind of excited. I'm not a Final Fantasy guy, but I looked at this trailer and I thought, my gosh, what's going on here?
Oh my gosh, dude, talk about getting my heart pumping, getting me excited. Obviously, Final Fantasy as a franchise is celebrating its 35th anniversary in June. We didn't get any Final Fantasy VII R remake, so it ended State of Play with the Final Fantasy 16 Dominance trailer, in which we learned so much. We see 8 different summons listed, maybe even a 9th one with some kind of weird symbol. And ultimately kind of getting in more ideas about the story, maybe even some kind of hints of a connection with Final Fantasy 14. They have kind of the red moon, like a red moon or a red dot next to the moon, which is essentially a big part of the Final Fantasy 14 story and lore. Who knows? Lots to speculate and more. But then we get to see more about the battle system and how what they call the icons, if you think Final Fantasy summons, are integrated into the combat, integrated into your character. It's an M-rated Final Fantasy game. I said on a Chris and I for Work to Game filmed a video today. Kind of, he hadn't seen it, so we did a reaction to it with him having seen it. Me have, and it's like, as an M-rated game, like, there looks to be some sex or some sexy scenes. Seems to be stepping itself up to try and compete against the Witchers of the world. I felt, and I stated that. I felt like Final Fantasy trying to live in this teen rating has been holding itself back. And so you've seen games like The Witcher coming out, and you see gamers who have grown up and now want deeper, richer, more realistic stories. And Final Fantasy could not do that. So they've allowed it to have an M rating. We see some kind of teases of sex scenes. I stated that I don't think Clive's the main character. I don't think we're going to see Clive's cock in 16, but I think they're going to have a lot of pushing, a lot
9 out of 10.
Play.
Nine out of 10. That's it.
But all in all, like, as a Final Fantasy fan, I'm thrilled. Yoshi P as a producer, I believe, has fundamentally changed the culture within Square Enix. And that's what we're seeing right now. We got a release window of summer 2023, which I think is a perfect time to release 16, especially as it relates to the relationship of what's coming out and with the future of Final Fantasy 14. And I think essentially that is going to be something that is going to, it's going to be really cool to see the reception of it, because Final Fantasy 15, they announced it's like the third Final Fantasy game to sell over 10 million units. Will 16 have the same level of success that 15 has? And I honestly think that what people are going to get, and what I hope for, my only concern is that we don't have a complete story, that they say, here's the story and then here's the DLC later. Like, I want 16 to be a full experience. And then if they later down the line want to release like a multiplayer DLC, or they want to do some more things that people are like, oh, I really enjoyed that, I would love to spend more time in this world, then they consider it, but not as a part of the package. If you go and play 15, you have to play the DLCs, you have to watch the movie, you have to watch the YouTube videos. Like, and if you do all that, you're gonna be like, man, this is a really cool world. But like most people are like, I played the game and I don't know what's going on with Arden. I don't know what's going on here. So 16 looks to set up a very unique story in terms of like lots of political strife, lots of, empire and kingdoms and fights and war. And hopefully, I think if they deliver, I think people are going to be really excited about it. But that trailer, man, I was freaking stoked. And the fact that it's within the year, I know no 10-year plan here, no like, hey guys, 16, here's the second trailer, and then we're looking at 2020, you know, 2030 or something like that. It's like, no, it's 2023 summer, PS5, hopefully also on PC. That's my take. What have you guys seen the trailer? Like, I know you, Lona, you were covering it live as well. 30, what do you think?
Look, I was a big Final Fantasy fan when I was younger. I stopped The last one I played, I think, was 11 is the last one I played. When I was younger, though, for some reason, 3 and 7 stick in my head a lot. I don't know why, but they just do. But my brother's really excited. He's a diehard Final Fantasy fan. He was like, oh, man, that looks good. Like, he's very excited for it. Personally, myself, I want to see like a movie. And then when they made a Final Fantasy movie, they screwed it up. Right. But the cutscenes and everything, I've always thought it was a beautiful game. I love the story of Final Fantasy. The last couple Final Fantasies, I go to YouTube and just watch the stories, like, cause I don't play them myself. So I just follow along with the YouTube breakdowns or the people that put the whole cutscenes together and stuff like that. That's how I enjoy Final Fantasy now. I don't play it myself, but it definitely looks like a fantastic game, and hopefully it comes out on time. Hopefully it does come out next summer for all you Final Fantasy fans.
I do want to jump in on Paul's comment, says that I think Final Fantasy should go back to some old school gameplay. They do, and they have already done that, and that's Bravery Default, and that's Octopath Traveler. Like, Square Enix is still kind of making those kind of games, but as a Final Fantasy, I doubt we'll see them return into that, kind of turn-based action, or you know the action turn-based system that they develop. But they do have those, and that's, I play those as well and enjoy them. They're just not branded Final Fantasy, but it is Final Fantasy. Lono, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing the original. Well, my brother played one of the original Final Fantasies on like the Nintendo or something. It was all the turn-based stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember the music. I remember like, oh, you know, this looks pretty cool. But I didn't like turn-based games. The first turn-based game I enjoyed was Super Mario RPG, which is, I think, still to this date, probably one of the best. And
yeah.
Then they did Final Fantasy VII, and I remember playing Final Fantasy VII for the cutscenes. I wasn't really playing for the game. I didn't think the game was, it didn't scratch me. At that point in time, that wasn't the type of game that I enjoyed, but the cutscenes seemed to me at the time, my memory is that they were at a higher level than other games at the time with like Sephiroth and stuff. And then since then, outside of Child of Light, I just have never been able to get into turn-based. And then they did the Final Fantasy VII remake, and I really liked it. But then all of a sudden it turned into super, super dialogue-heavy fetch questing where I wasn't really doing anything. And I was like, I'm not enjoying this. The combat at the beginning was actually pretty enjoyable. So when I saw this trailer, I thought, now this looks like something I might be able to get into, right? This looks more action-oriented. I loved the medieval. It felt more medieval in the setting and the armor and the swords and stuff. And the character design was phenomenal. And I know that Final Fantasy, I'm going to get quality. It's just a matter of, is this quality going to hit me? Do you know? Right. It's like, you could go to a certain restaurant that specializes in a certain type of food, and you know if it's a 5-star restaurant, it's going to be the best of the best. But if that's not, if like, I don't like seafood that much, and I've gone to the places down in Florida that my wife and everybody says is the best to go, and it just never really hits me. So you could take me to the world-class seafood restaurant, and it just might not hit me, even though it's at the highest quality of caliber. So I know that these games are going to be very high caliber, but the question will be, is that combat, is that JRPG influence, because it's going to have that influence, going to feel a little bit like some of those JRPGs, is that going to push me away? I don't know. I'll have to kind of see more and get my hands on it to decide whether or not. Now, there was the rumor that if this thing was ready, it was going to kick Forspoken out of this year. That clearly isn't happening. So I think that trailer also softly added a little bit more credence to Forspoken's release date.
Mm-hmm, I agree on that one. And what I'm actually really curious about is that when you do go hands-on, how do you feel like, especially when you think of a game like The Witcher being very well praised? It's like, I feel like Final Fantasy has, in a way, for the while, actually held itself back due to its own like restrictions. Oh, we got to hit that teen rating. But what I'm getting here, and while this isn't what I would say is The Witcher, but what would a Final Fantasy Witcher look like? Especially if Witcher 3 is so beloved, when Witcher 4 is announced, people are so hyped, that what would Square Enix, what would they build if they weren't restricted by what, you know, like what they want? And I think essentially that's what hopefully 16 hopes to deliver. And I think if it does, I think if 16 knocks itself out of the park, I think essentially you see Yoshi P cementing himself over that entire franchise going forward, where they have the other divisions working on games made like Forspoken and their other various different IPs and properties. And obviously the persistent rumor that Sony might be acquiring them, would be very interesting. But I think essentially this is going to be, I've always said when Yoshi P took over, especially when you look at Square Enix's history, 14 1.0, just absolutely abysmal, almost killed the company. And then essentially Yoshi P comes in, implements, you know, modern design practices, especially within his, you know, within his division, and then him ascending within the Square Enix ecosystem to actually have a impact on 15. These changes aren't going to impact 15 in a wild way. It's really going to be about 16. I said that even before 16 was announced. And I feel like what I'm looking forward to is that, how is 16 received as an entire package? Some people are going to like it, some people aren't. That's just the nature of making an entertainment product. But ultimately, does it actually feel like a full game and not a game that's being sold to us in parts, like Final Fantasy VII Remake?
I have a question, because you're a huge Final Fantasy guy. Now, yeah. Final Fantasy, in general, there might be bad versions of a Final Fantasy game, but not enough to ruin the franchise, right? There's so many Final Fantasy games and such a huge... the IP of Final Fantasy is like the IP of like Marvel in the film industry right now, right? It's just like the biggest that you could possibly get probably in the gaming industry, right?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy. So even if it was a subpar game, I don't think it would be hated in any way. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's too big. I don't want to say too big to fail.
16, I don't think will hurt the franchise. 14, you think it did. 14.
But what I'm saying, 14 was like the speed bump, right? And then it just kind of like went over it and then continued on, right? It's still beloved. Final Fantasy is still beloved. It's not going to go down anytime
soon.
It has
value, yeah. The brand has value.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
But the brand lost a lot of value with 14. And a lot of that actually like did, you know, 14 has to own that, because expectations are, you know, like they didn't manage that. But you look at when people are going from 13, which was a hallway simulator, a lot of the 13's problems were based off of the transition from PS2 to PS3. Japanese culture, a lot of it actually was hurt because Unreal Engine wasn't translated for them to be able to take advantage of. So the West really made a huge boon, and Japan really stayed in the PS2 era longer. So you actually go look at, I would say, Final Fantasy 12. Final Fantasy 12 is incredible. It's genius. It's beautiful. Like what they did with that game on a PS2 should be like to this day studied. It's just unreal. But then you look at 13, and all of a sudden 13, people are like, what's going on? Like,
there's a change in the guard,
a change,
basically. Okay,
what's happened? Like, and they weren't so satisfied, and 13 had a lot of potential, but I don't think they delivered on it because they weren't aware of the development time and costs in delivering a HD game, because that was the era of HD video gaming that Microsoft set. And so they kind of get caught off guard. And so generally you have that, and then you have 14 falling flat originally. And then the company just like, what do we do? Like, and you see it, they had this, I think actually in my mind, what the best thing to happen to Square Enix was the success of Bravery Default. Cause all of a sudden they're like, oh, they were trying to be something that they really just weren't. And like, you know what people want from Square Enix? Is they want that the Japanese feel. It doesn't mean that it's just for Japan, but they want their aesthetic and their view on it, right? And that adds value. But I think that you see kind of their push into trying to be more global and appealing and kind of losing something of the charm.
What the fans wanted.
Right. Something of the charm, because it's like, you know, there are people who are like, I don't like it because it's Japanese. It's like, okay, that's your opinion, right? Like, okay. Right. But it's like, at the end of the day, like, it kind of was like, well, like, what are you trying to be? And they kind of had their hands in all kinds of different pots, and it ultimately felt like more watered down. It wasn't what we were wanting or expecting in the evolution. And that's why I think 15 actually turned it around. But there were still mistakes to be had with it. And I think essentially when we look, that's why I'm really hopeful for 16. But the franchise, yes, has value, but still a company has to protect that value, and your shareholders, and you got, you know, things that all that kind of comes into play. And I think they did the right thing with salvaging 14. Clearly financially that was the right call, but it took 10 years to really do that. And then now they're, I think when you're looking at it with Yoshi P as kind of almost a celebrity over this this IP, I think essentially, like, if 16 knocks it out of the park, then essentially I think you're pretty much ensuring that Yoshi P is over the franchise to some degree. Maybe that there's going to be, like, they have a board that they formed after 14's failure to basically ensure, like, quality of what Final Fantasy is, to protect it as a brand, because that brand has value, that IP has value.
Well, speaking of established franchises falling from grace,
transition.
Yeah, there's some unhappy people about this Sonic game. Now, I was hearing different things today. Thank you, MJ Talks, for gifting membership. So kind. All five already claimed. That is very kind. Thank you very much. You guys that are members on radio will enjoy some Madam streams very soon on Mondays. She'll roast you up if you'll submit to it, if you're not scared. But but Sega wasn't scared. They throw out a product onto the battlefield here, and it's not getting the best treatment. I was told today that IGN released new footage of the combat.
I haven't seen it yet.
I heard one person say that it made things look better, and I heard another person say that it made things look worse. Now, there's glimpses of the combat in the initial teaser that actually made me think, okay, there might be something here. But the actual, like, running around compared to some stuff, Mike, like, take this one, because the comparisons are, they're hurting it, I think.
All right, so the reason I brought this topic up is because I'm a big Star Wars fan, I'm a big Marvel fan, and I like when they make games and they stick to the lore and the tradition of what the game is, sort of like what Ginger was just talking about with Final Fantasy, like listening to what, like in Battlefield, they didn't listen to the fans of Battlefield, and they made a bad Battlefield, right? Now, I love Sonic, okay? And I played all the Sonics on the Sega Genesis back in the day and moving forward on the Nintendos and whatnot. And I saw this and I was excited, but first impressions are everything to me. And the first impression on this one was like a wet towel just hitting the ground. You know, when you hear that splat that it makes, right? Like, I was like, man, this is not what Sonic is. This is almost comparable to Ugly Sonic when they first showed Ugly Sonic for the film. And then the fans gave feedback and they're like, okay, we'll go back to the drawing board. And I saw this and I was like, it looks like Sonic's just dropped in like Breath of the Wild or dropped in some other game. Now, maybe the story, we don't know what the story is. Maybe he goes through a portal and comes into a world like that where it's not supposed to be like his Sonic world, right? Sort of like the film where, you know, he's in a real world instead of his cartoony world where he's from, right? And I just looked at this and went, what a disappointment. Like, this is your first impression. It almost reminds me of Halo when they first showed Halo Infinite and everyone was like, there's something off about this. I just can't put my finger on it. And then it was delayed a year. Now, this is supposed to come out supposedly this year.
This year.
Right? This year. And I looked at it and I was like, oh no. I was like, you need to put this on the shelf or take it out back and put it down. Because this is not the open world game that people wanted for Sonic. And then I saw a Sonic fan game that was created. It's called Sonic Omen. And holy Christ, this guy needs to, they should just pay him the money up front right now and just take that game and put it on the console like ASAP. Because it's a beautifully done, like full-fledged Sonic level game, and he moves faster. It feels like Sonic. It knows what Sonic is. Why? Because it was made by a fan who loves everything about Sonic, right? So this is the conversation I want to have, right? I looked this up.
It's a week,
right?
It's
not worth it. I saw what not only what Sonic, what this guy did for Sonic, but I saw other games, right? There's this other game called I Am Batman. If you guys have ever heard of this game, it's basically somebody took Batman Arkham, but created it in the 1989 Batman Tim Burton world. Okay. And he put Keaton as Batman. And it's a fan-made game, and it's amazing looking. And you're like, holy, like there's no combat in the gameplay I saw, but it's the passion of the fan that loves games like this, right? There's another game called Force Combat, which takes the Star Wars characters and basically puts them in a Mortal Kombat game. Now, there's other games out there sort of like that, but this game of Force Combat was a passion project from fans, and they made a better game than any game that we've seen so far from Star Wars in a really long time, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's just more of these games that are fan-made that I'm just amazed, and Sonic really, I saw this and I was just like, this is, I don't get why companies don't get the IPs they have or the characters that they're making. There's a whole team of people, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people that are making these things, and the people that are making it, it doesn't feel like they're making the game because the IP and they know it'll make money, but they're not making the game because they're passionate about what they're making, right? And this is what brought it up. And there's so many games. I wrote down a list of games, right? Like, there's a remake of Resident Evil 1, where actually it's called Resident Evil 2 Reborn, right? Well, actually, I'm sorry. Resident Evil 1 was made, and because it was a fan project, they made Resident Evil 2 Reborn because of the fan-made game that was out there, okay? The I Am Batman game was so, like, well aware of people on the internet that Warner Brothers told them to stop making it, okay, because they were going to sue them because of it, right? And it was a free game. He wasn't trying to sell it to anybody. He was just making a fan game and putting it out there. And then you have this Sonic Omen, and you look at it and you're just like, this guy gets what Sonic is, right? He gets what Sonic games should look like. And then you have these devs that get this game, and they're just out of touch, man. Another thing, Counter-Strike and Black Mesa were fan-made, like, in the beginning, and then they became full-fledged games, and they were off of Half-Life, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have Arma, and then a fan-made, from Arma, they made PUBG, right? From Team Fortress, they used the Quake engine to make that type of stuff. They get the StarCraft turned into a game called Eons of Strife, I think it was called, which then turned into what Dota is, and then Dota turned into what League of Legends is. You see what I'm saying? Like, the passion projects that fans make start to come into the realm.
Yeah.
And then there's one more game that nobody really knows about, and I just saw a video a couple days ago. It's called Terradrome, I think it's called. It's a horror fighting game, like Mortal Kombat, but it takes all of the characters like Jason, Freddy, Michael Myers, all the villains, Chucky, puts them in a game, and it's a full-fledged game. It's been out for like a decade, and it's really, really cool. They got a cease and desist because they basically, at the time when they were coming out with this back in 2010, Freddy and Jason were coming out in the other type of games that they were making, and they didn't want them to infringe on their money, right? Even though they weren't making any money off of it. But what do you guys think about as far as like these passion projects that fans, like, you're a fan, like, if you know coding, Ginger, would you start making a Final Fantasy game? You know what I mean? Like your own Final Fantasy world and stuff. Would you try?
I know,
after 14 sucked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know the law in such a way that no, I wouldn't make, and I wouldn't brand it Final Fantasy, but I would, you know, it would be Final Fantasy, but it would be branded obviously something different, you know, that connection. But yeah, like that's the thing is that like when it comes down to programming, you need time, money, and resources. If you want to make a game, you need time, money, and resources and passion. And companies, big companies, sometimes they're able to tap into that passion and that vision. Sometimes they're able to really beat it out of you. Like I know I've heard, you know, stories about people who are like, yeah, I'm going, like, you don't go into game programming for the money because you're going to make less money because of you're in the game programming, and you usually can make it up in game sales. Like, so you're like, hey, the game sold well, the publisher got paid, and then there's some dividends that end up getting paid out to everybody who worked on that. And so that's how you can kind of sometimes do that, but that requires obviously the game being a success. But yeah, they, like, if like the publishers and, you know, the, like, they can take advantage of that passion that people go into that industry for. But you're 100% right. Like, passion is kind of a key aspect, and sometimes it's like, hey, you know, I mean, Phil Spencer said this. He's like, I can go and tell people to go make whatever game. I can say, hey, you're going to go make this game, and it's not going to be a good game. You know, it's like, because if you don't have people who actually really want to make that or are excited about doing that, they're not going to stick around. Or because guess what? Like, you have the ability to leave and move. And that's where you start seeing these 10-year projects.
Right.
When you start, when people are like, oh, they've worked on this for 10 years. It's like, no. They've had huge human resource issues, and they have to keep hiring and letting go and restructuring it. And so, yeah, go ahead. What do you think?
There's a difference, though, between like if you're an artist that wants to make your game, it's so out there to try to market that, and a difference between an IP that's very well loved like Sonic, right? Like a thing where even people that remake like Mario 64, they like ported on the Unreal Engine 4 and recreated the game, and same with Ocarina of Time, you know, Zelda. Like, these are passion projects. They just remake the game because they don't want to. But then the company's like, hey, don't do that because we're going to do that now, even though they had the time to do it. Yeah, yeah, right, right.
We want to serve the right because, like, legally, there's certain things they have to do.
Of course.
Or they end up, you know, legally at some point forfeiting that. Like, oh, now it's in the public domain, you know, as we are seeing a Winnie the Pooh horror movie about to be rolling out. So it's that there's some things that they have to. And it's like, I would love to see, though, rather than, like, the cease and desist, like, hey, why don't we team up together?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we? Like, you got the passion. Let's bring that to be. And we've seen that happen once, from my knowledge. Yeah, probably a few times. But the thing that pops in my head was the Mega Man Capcom, you know, passion project. They didn't have anything for Mega Man's, like, 30th anniversary. And so they ended up just basically, like, teaming up with the person who was making Mega Man and having all the Capcom, you know, the Street Fighter bosses. And I thought that was great. I loved it. I was like, it was so, and they just released it for free because it wasn't like a full game. Like, it was like, there was definitely some bugs and stuff like that, but it's like, yeah, like, that was cool. I would like to see that. Like, yeah, find the people, put the right people in the right spot. And if clearly someone's got the passion to work on that Sonic game, et cetera, like, on their own, like, man,
what could you do with the whole team? This guy did it by himself, you know?
Right. And it's sometimes, though, like, from a development perspective, is that sometimes a bigger team doesn't mean either a better or faster product, because it just means you got way more things you have to coordinate. So sometimes one guy just working on something with, like, you know, probably for a long period of time, like, he ends up being pretty quick to be able to get things, like, turned around and get things done, because he doesn't have to go through a whole, like, oh, if we make him faster, we got to get the level design guys to make some adjustments, you know, in that regard. So he can be like, screw it, I'm just gonna do it all.
Now, Sonic Mania, that came out years ago, that was actually a fan-made game first. Yeah. And then they picked it up and made it into Sonic Mania, which came out in what do you think about this, Lono, about Sonic and about the industry, about passion?
Yeah, we covered it yesterday, and I was really, really surprised at the turnout, because I thought, it's kind of a shot in the dark, you know, it's a Sonic game, but we had a really, really strong response, and I really think everything changed when we made the comparison. It was like, okay, it's bland, Weezy said it looks like an asset swap, which I thought was just such a perfect description. It was like, this looks kind of like it was meant to be another game, and they just kind of threw Sonic elements into it, or almost like a pre-generated world, just like to test things out. And like, yeah, here's a world with hills and mountains, and they just kind of like hit a button and all this Sonic stuff just kind of fell out of the sky and kind of hit the ground. I thought, wow, that's a pretty apt description. I thought, well, okay, you know, maybe they can polish it. Maybe they can get it a little bit better. And then we watched the fan-made game. And I thought,
night and day.
I thought, my goodness, I'd want to play that. You know, that looked so good. Now, I will admit, the fan-made game that we looked at, you're saying it's Omens. It had a different name before, and that's what we watched. We watched it under it had a different name. And it was still, to me, there was still an element of like, okay, you're kind of on a racetrack, right? Like, you're putting Sonic on a racetrack. And I think that is generally the challenge for Sonic, is that Sonic is a linearly driven character. He's almost, as somebody left a great comment on a YouTube video and said, he's like a race car. Like, you just kind of put him and he kind of just goes forward. And I think that's the real call for innovation, is that if you're going to put him in an open world game, you have to contextually translate Sonic's speed into open world traversal. Because if not, what it turns into is what we saw, which is, even if you made him faster, just watch that trailer at like 1.5 speed. It's not any better. It's still just this linear, always moving forward thing. And I remember in Sunset Overdrive, there were elements of that game that I didn't like because of that. You always had to keep moving forward to maintain momentum. But it was still a super creative game. And I think the art style is really what sold me on the game. And that was the other thing that hurt this trailer, is that the art style was so non-distinct. It's like, he looks like a cartoon. He looks like a toy kind of dropped into this semi-photorealistic environment. It's like, if the environment looked like him, I think people would have been a little bit more appreciative of, like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. I also think, from a marketing perspective, somebody should have told them to leak this. Like, leak this as a if you had a leak this as a tech test, everybody would have been like, that looks kind of cool. That might have potential. But when you're like, here's your IGN. First look at Sonic with IGN, everyone's like, what the frick is this? Yeah. It looks like a technical test. It looks like you're testing out the mechanics of the game. Like, nothing's really happening. So they hurt themselves, unfortunately. And this is feels like deja vu from the movie. It's like, I already told people, I said, I bet you this thing gets delayed because the response is so negative. The projected sales on it and the shareholders have got to be saying, yo, you got to pump the brakes on that project.
That's actually the hope then, you know, in that regards, because then they can, you know, like, the thing that frustrates me about Sonic as an IP is that from a games perspective, it's like so hit and miss. Like, we talked about Mania. Yeah, it started as a fan, but it's like, there's been like, I like Generations, I like Mania, like, and I actually, like, I remember the original one on Dreamcast, like, I actually enjoyed that. But then it was always like the quality of a Sonic game, you never knew. You can never sit here and say like, this is going to be like, and so like, yeah, like, there are good Sonic games and there are bad Sonic games. And then when I go look at Mario, it's like, I wish that Sega had the same protections in place for Sonic that Nintendo does for Mario. And it's like, yeah, Mario right. was able to translate. And it's like, could you do that? You bring some Sunset Overdrive. Like, yeah, maybe you're not into the kind of the momentum, but imagine having traversal and speed built into that core design of everything that's going on. And then just like literally going and having fun. You need somebody who knows what that game has to be. And like, yeah. And that's the thing where I got burned out of Sonic games, where it's like, a new Sonic game. It was like, I was kind of watching. I was like, oh, cool, open world. Maybe that could be something that works for Sonic. Cause then you could just dash around wherever you want to go and then you go into do whatever. And then I'm like, well, obviously I'll wait until it comes out and see what people actually right. say about it, as opposed to like, if Nintendo announced a new Mario game today, like, I would have it pre-ordered it as soon as it became available. Yeah. Like, there's not even a question, because it is a guarantee that, like, and if they release a bad one, that would be shocking. Even if it's not my favorite Mario game, like, right. that would be really shocked. It's like, oh, that's strange. But they don't. And like, Sega, literally, I wish they would protect Sonic like that, like Mario's protected. What's going to be really interesting to see is that I love the Sonic movies. I like the Sonic 1 and Sonic 2. Absolutely fantastic. I adore them. Me and my kids love them. Now we have a Mario movie coming out. Like, yeah. How would that be? Because, like, the last Mario movie was, I was a kid when I saw it. Yeah, I was like, terrible. I watched it.
You can say it. It was terrible.
Yeah. But it's like, the question is, though, is that, like, will their protection of Mario as a game have a bad impact on the movie? Like, are they able to go in?
I think it would. Here's the test I gave it, right? This is the last thing I'll say, we can move on or whatever. I gave a test because my son loves Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, right? He's 7 years old. He's been playing a couple of Sonic games. He downloaded the Sonic texture pack stuff that you can get. Well, it's actually like playing Sonic within Minecraft, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he loves Sonic. And I picked him up from camp the other day, and I was like, hey, buddy, they just dropped the first look of Sonic Frontiers. And he's like, oh, he's like, is that the open world one? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, I'm so excited. He's like, can I see it? I was like, so we got home and I played it for him. And he just kind of went quiet. And at the end, I said, well, what'd you think? And he went, it looks kind of boring. And I went, oh, okay. I was like, what's boring about it? He's like, I don't know. He's not moving fast. And now this is my 7-year-old son. Now my 7-year-old's been playing games since he's about 3 years old. He's been playing Minecraft and whatnot. And I went, in my head internally, I went, oh boy. I was like, that's a failure. If a 7-year-old is bummed out about a Sonic game, okay, because it looks boring, you're missing something, right? You're missing something. And he plays the Mario Odyssey games, right? Like, full-fledged. He plays it through himself. He's played Breath of the Wild, okay? He's playing Link of the Path. Like, he's playing these type of games at 7 years old, and he saw this and was excited internally, and then when he saw it, he was like, I don't know, Dad. It looks bad. And I was like, oh, they have to go back to the drawing board.
That's going to be a Game Pass game.
I had somebody else say that. They said they showed it to their nephew or their son or something, and they were like, it looks kind of boring. And I actually tend to agree with what Eugene is saying, is that the basic gameplay premise is going to fail in the modern market. Like, going fast isn't enough. You're just running and doing stuff quickly. You know, it's like, it feels, there's so many mobile games like that now, right? Where you're just kind of running on a track and you're like trying to collect everything.
The dash games.
Yeah. If you're going to land on a console or PC or whatever, and you're going to have this big, huge open space, this is the other thing that I think is happening with open world games that it didn't really dawn on me until I was actually talking about it and just looking at it is there almost needs to be an impetus for the open world. Why have these mountains and these hillscapes, these biomes, these valleys, these big, huge open vistas, and I'm never really doing anything with it? It's almost as if it's just a set. It's just a set. You know, it sets this stage and it looks amazing because when I'm playing Horizon Forbidden West or Breath of the Wild or Elden Ring, the open world is truly traversable. It serves exploratory purpose. And if you just have this open world to just give this cool setting, if it's essentially just a bigger set piece than a non-open world, I think you've failed to actually utilize your open world in the appropriate way. You just sort of did it so you could say you have an open world game.
Mm-hmm.
So
big to be big.
Yeah. Well, speaking of big, there was a big surprise in the Sony State of Play last night, and I opened up the day by telling people I was wrong, which I don't do that all that often, but I was wrong. I said that I never saw this happening, and I wasn't the only one. There were predictions, there were funny tweets from, I think, 2017 or something long ago, where saying that Spider-Man would never come to PC. I just didn't see it. I thought, no, they're going to want to keep Spider-Man on PlayStation. Wasn't the only analyst to think this. And during State of Play, they somehow kept this quiet. They reveal that Spider-Man Remastered is coming to PC August 12th. Now, they kept this a little bit more quiet, but it is in the blog. Spider-Man Miles Morales is also coming to PC in the fall of this year. Both games combined have sold 33 million copies. Spider-Man is the single most popular superhero across the globe, and he's about to land on the largest gaming platform, next only to mobile.
Yep.
So, there's big questions here. Is it going to be able to catch up or get close to the total sales they have now? Because the PC market's pretty big. The question is the common hardware in the PC market strong enough? I think so, as long as they optimize it to be scaled down, because this thing ran on a PS4, which the PS4 is pretty weak in the realm of the average PC that somebody has right now. So what did you guys make of this announcement? Because I was not prepared. There were leaks about Returnal PC settings, Sackboy, and some others that people are like assuming are coming to PC. I'm dying for Ghost of Tsushima, obviously, to come to PC. But this one, they somehow kept quiet and kind of shocked everybody. What'd you guys make of this? Ginger, if you want to start.
This has been something I've been expecting for a while. I've been seeing Sony slowly become, and look at what Microsoft's doing and basically sitting here saying, why are we sacrificing hundreds of millions of dollars just to sell a console in that regards? And as much as like you were looking at the generational shift, with mobile has completely changed gaming. And this kind of brings us all full circle back to where we've been. When you sit here and say, hey, I want to play this game, and then it's like, oh, I can only play it in this environment. Before, that was a marketing thing. And people would go and say, okay, I'm going to go buy that product. Now, when you sit here and say, hey, you can only play this game here, people say, I'm good. I'm going to go play any number of other games everywhere else. And sure, you're going to get people. But when you go look at console sales, and I tell this to people all the time, and they're like, oh my gosh, 100 million units. I go, yeah, that's awesome. Like 100 million units is great. But it was 100 million units back in 2000. It was 100 million units back in like 2005 or 8 or whatever. That number isn't going up. In fact, it hasn't even still hit like the PS2 era. And yeah, the PS2 had a DVD player. The gaming world, gamers have massively grown, and they're not buying consoles. And so when you're sitting here saying like, okay, so Sony, if they want to do timed exclusives or like first on PlayStation, like that makes sense. I have no issue with that. But you're looking at an industry shifting thing and Sony finally catching on board. And nothing makes it more clear that they were caught off guard when they we believe in hardware generations. We believe in all this. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, wait, we messed up. We're going to have cross-gen. And okay, now we're going to come to PC. Like, this is all good. And if you're a Sony fan, this is actually good for you. You're not being in danger. In fact, you're going to see them make even more money for these incredible games that are going to help fund them. The reality is Sony shifting into a games as a service model. The reason they are is because those games print money every month, and they're looking to have 10 by 2025. They wouldn't have spent the money on Bungie if they weren't doing if this wasn't a part of their grand scheme of plans. Does that mean we're going to see the end of the single player games? No. But what that does is it reduces the overall risk so that a single player game can either spend more time. And that's the thing, as somebody who's a fan of gaming, I have no console no console allegiance. Like, it's just make good games. What this, I think, gives them the ability to do is continue to have that mindset of, okay, we will release it when it's ready. That's the thing I applaud Sony for. They will give their teams more time so that they can release that amazing experience. If Ragnarok isn't ready this fall, they will delay it, and that will be a good thing. And when it comes out, people will be thrilled with it. But that comes at a real financial cost to them. How do you make that difference up? Well, games as a service, but also release that on PC. Again, then you're opening yourself up to a market, and then maybe what you end up doing and what they probably see is that people will pick up the Spider-Man game, and the next time the next Spider-Man game drops and it's exclusive for PlayStation 6 months or a year or whatever, maybe then somebody's like, hell yeah, I'm playing that day and date. I didn't play it because I didn't have a PlayStation, or my case, I didn't play Spider-Man. You know why? Because my PlayStation 4 died, and then I was like, we're about 18 months away from what I would assume would be a PS5. Little did I know that I couldn't get a PS5, still haven't been able to, and hopefully that will be something I get to solve. But Spider-Man coming to PC is a day and date purchase for me. Like, I'm thrilled for that. I can't wait to experience Spider-Man. I've been wanting to play that game for a while. And yeah, I guess I could have gone and borrowed a friend's PlayStation, but I didn't, and here we are. That's my take. That's my TED Talk.
My thing is that I've said this on my show many, many times. I said that PlayStation needs to do three things to compete with Xbox. One, they need to have a service like Game Pass. Two, they need to buy other companies up like Microsoft was doing. And three, they have to put their games on PC. And they've done all three of these things in the last 2 years, right? The last 2 years. So, ding, ding, ding. They've checked the boxes. And I think the sales will be really good for Spider-Man because arguably he's the most popular superhero on the planet. Right, there's like Superman, Batman, and then there's Marvel Spider-Man. Yeah. Right? And when he comes out with a game or comes out with a movie, it just sells. Even the people before even the game came out, when they pre-ordered the game because Spider-Man was on Marvel's Avengers just for PlayStation, people bought more on the PlayStation because of Spider-Man. Right, and they know this. So coming to PC, I think it's great for them. And I think, sort of like what you said, Ginger, you're not going to see like 30 million sales for Spider-Man on PC this time around. But what you will see is when Spider-Man 2 comes out, okay, and I don't think they'll do a 6 month delay. They'll day and date, they'll drop it on PlayStation and they'll drop it on PC because why? It's a single player game. You're going to make your money across the board. Why hold it back? Because it's not like the people that are going to buy it for PlayStation are going to buy it for PlayStation then buy it for PC again, right? They're going to wait. They're going to be like,
Sony fans are die hard or die, that, baby.
But that's such a small minority.
You bring in cross save though, and then hell yeah,
sure.
Like, you bring in cross save, and then legitimately, like I said that with Outriders. Outriders was so annoying because it had cross play.
Yeah,
but I was like, it was on Game Pass, but I would have bought it anyway. Like, I would have bought it and played it with cross save. So you bring in cross save and you can actually sell more copies.
Yeah, there's games. Like I bought Grand Theft Auto on the 360, I bought Grand Theft Auto on the One, I bought Grand Theft Auto on the you know what I mean? Like, there's games where you buy it multiple times. But what I'm saying, the majority of the people are not crazy, you know, like us, where we'll buy the game four times on four different consoles, right? The normal people that don't have a PlayStation 5 or didn't have a PlayStation 4, like, oh man, I don't have a place. PlayStation 4 broke, or maybe I didn't want to play it on the PlayStation 4, waiting for it to come on PC. Now that here's that day. So the people that own the consoles, why would they buy it for console now when they can get it for PC, right? It's an inferior product. Let's be honest, if you're playing on console, right? For instance, I didn't get Ghost of Tsushima because I have a PlayStation 4. I don't want to play that game until I get the full experience on a PlayStation 5, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it comes to PC, right? So if that game comes to PC, well, then I'll play it on PC. So I think it's great for Spider-Man. I think it's great for the future of Spider-Man and Wolverine and any other game they come out with that's a single-player game, because it's just more people that can play their game on day one, which is more money in their pockets. And I think Eugene said it in chat, PC sales are good because it brings more money. That means they'll spend more money on those first-party title games down the road, and they're also throwing more money at single-player games for PlayStation because they want to support the single-player games.
I don't think they're going to do the day one PC thing for a handful of reasons. A lot of people think they're going to. They have said that they're not wanting to do parallel development. So unless that statement has suddenly changed, they don't want to do that. I also think the way these games sell on PlayStation, they're, if you look at the reports of anytime they resaturate the market with PS5s, their biggest titles suddenly have just insane, you know, 400% sales growth, right? Because now you have all these, like Mike said, he's waiting. He doesn't have a PS5. So they know that, number one, it's a console mover. Everybody's kind of waiting, like, oh man, I really want to be able to play that. You know, Spider-Man 2 is a great example. Spider-Man 2 landing PS5 only will be a massive console mover. And they know they can kick it over 18 months later and make a ton of money again. You know, so I actually think they're going to continue with this format because it maximizes profit, which is exactly what's going to dictate the decision. I don't think selling day and date would maximize profit. I think it would actually hurt it a little bit.
I'm gonna push back on that just a little bit because I think they're not day and date now because they're catching up. They're trying to get the games that were not on PC onto PC right now. Moving forward, like Spider-Man came out what 4 DLCs when it originally launched, so. Let's put it in perspective. If Spider-Man comes out 6 months before it comes out on PC, and then all of a sudden the first DLC drops, where the people are going to wait because they know it's going to come to PC because they're not going to buy it for PlayStation now, right? They know that the game, now because Spider-Man's coming to PC, that when Spider-Man 2 comes out, it's going to be coming to PC down the road, right? They know this now. So they're not going to buy it on the console. They'll just wait for it to come out. Now, if it comes out 6 months later and now it's on console and it's on PC 6 months later, but then DLC 1 comes out the same time the game launches on console, then you're kind of saying, hey, you're punished on the PC because not only do they get the game first, but now they're also getting the DLC first. Well, they're customers. They want to buy your game. Why would you stop them from buying your game? So I understand the optimization and stuff like that, but I think they're catching up to the progress. If they want to compete in this industry with Xbox day and day one with their first party title games, look, they're already beating Xbox with their first party title games alone. Okay. They're not putting it on their service. So why would, in my opinion, why would they miss out on, yeah, but the FOMO, as you guys are saying, FOMO, the people that have PCs, they know that the games are coming to PC. They're going to wait now, just like when it was Epic 6 months to a year for getting certain games in the Epic store. People on Steam are like, I'll just wait. I'm not going to get it on Epic. I'll just wait for it to come to Steam. And they did. So Sony, to me, would just be missing out on that money up front for the sales if they decided to wait 6 months on day one for PC.
I'll be neat to see what Sony ultimately ends up kind of deciding what their pathway forward is. And again, I don't think it's console. I think console is going to be still around, just like, you know, record players are still around, just like, you know, technology is still around. There's demand for consoles to be around. But I think essentially, you know, when you look at it, it's like, okay, what is the future? What's better for gamers? And honestly, I think in what works better for gamers, I think is going to benefit them as a company. And just people want to play games, like, and you want to make games and you want to sell games. Great. And, you know, and I like console experiences, so I'll continue to buy consoles. But like, you don't, like, I think essentially, like, yeah, like, why do you have to have, like, if you don't have to have a console, if you've invested a lot of money in a gaming PC, you know, like, yeah, and you want to play a game, you're going to wait. You know, you're not going to go sit here and be like, okay, I'm going to go buy that PS5. Well, maybe your PC can do 120 frames a second or 240 frames a second, and you'll just wait because you want that experience. Especially with the single player game, multiplayer game becomes a whole different issue because it is about community. It is about getting everybody in. And if you sit here and say, hey, we're going to have our multiplayer game only in one area, you're going to fundamentally like kneecap your own community. That's why I think Halo should go to PlayStation. Like, just the fact that it's not there as a multiplayer game, why? Who cares?
Right.
But it's branded Microsoft. Like, well, you know, guys, it's 2022. Like, we can evolve. We don't have to be stuck in 90s console war mentality for the rest of the industry. But yeah.
I do think they're going to shorten the window of time that you have to wait. I know when they brought God of War to PC, there was an interview where they said they had learned quite a bit and they had changed some of the pipeline and procedures for God of War Ragnarok. So God of War Ragnarok will be able to be brought to PC a little bit quicker than this last time. I mean, it took 4 years. I don't think they're going to have that be the standard window. I think the standard window will be 12 to 18 months. Because I think until they see, until they see a provable case. If like, let's say Mike is correct, they would need market research to come to that conclusion. So if they can do some market research and forecast and say, we're actually going to maximize profit by doing day and date, well, then they'll do day and date. I think in the current structure, they have too many competing interests. They need to move PS5s. And when PS5s move, it does crazy amounts of sales for the games that are already out. And so I don't think they want to disrupt that just yet. Now, Mike's prediction could come true, but I would imagine it would be a lot further down the road. It could be once the PS5s have hit really good market saturation. They're easier to find. They're on store shelves. So I would think, you know, in 3 or 4 years, they could say, hey, let's get these games day and date on PC because they're not really system movers anymore, and we'll make more sales. So I think there's like lines intersecting at some point where what Mike's saying does happen. I think it'll take a little bit longer. I like Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I might have missed that. I was reading chat.
Yeah, I said down the line, I said they'll come out day one. Like when Spider-Man 2 comes out, I said it'll be on console and day one at the same time. Like
No, I disagree. I think it's going to take longer than that, because Spider-Man 2 is the first time they're leaving behind officially PS4. So I think what you're saying will happen later than Spider-Man.
So you're saying instead of 2023, it'll happen like 2025.
Yeah, something like that. I'm saying if it happens, two things need to take place though. They need to be able to prove they'll make more profit, and the PS5 needs to have hit its market saturation that they're happy with. Like, I think those two things have to happen first.
Well, when most of the games come out on PlayStation, now I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know the average number is around 8 to 10 million copies sold. Like when God of War came out, I think it sold like 8. And then at 10, and then obviously it sold way more after the fact. But when it first launches that first window, you have your hardcore day one PlayStation, fans that no matter what first party title comes out, Horizon, Last of Us, Spider-Man, God of War, they all sold around 6, 8, 10 million copies. And that's the range when it first releases day one, right? And after that, people start to save up money. Down the road, they get it for Christmas. Down the road, they get it for their birthdays, whatever. And the sales just keep growing. They never shrink, obviously. I think that if they bring it to PC day one, that 8 to 10 now goes to 12 to 15, right? And that's the way I'm looking at it. They're gonna make more money because there's that same growth of people that always buy the game when it comes out, between 8 and 10 million copies. And I think if they bring it to PC, that number can go to 12 to 15 and so on for faster.
Okay, well, we'll see, because
time will tell.
We're going to blink and those games will be here, which will be awesome, you know, because I'm very excited about Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine. So we'll have some definitive titles to test some of these theories, because I have other people saying, you know, oh, these titles will be day and date on PS Plus, which I don't agree with. I think they're going to continue to stick to their guns on that.
I disagree with that. I don't think they're going to bring Ragnarok. They're going to wait like 6 months, 8 months before they bring it to the service, because I don't like the Game Pass model for first party single player games.
Yeah.
Single player games for that need a delay, because otherwise you're going to hurt sales.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I see chat saying like their live service game will be PC day one. I agree with that. Like, it's like, why would you limit
something
that is, you know, live service games, like
the live service
Destiny
games.
Like, and it's like, why would you cut yourself off? Like, why would you say like, okay, because like most likely when you talk about, and that's, but when I see live service, I always think multiplayer, right? Because it's like, you know, they made a live service single player game that's just story driven. I'm like, that's an interesting thing. Let's see if that plays out. I don't know. But at its core, like, that's the multiplayer aspect. And so, you wouldn't want that. Because you're not going to see people just like automatically flock. What you'll find in this case, especially with Destiny, like as a good example, now that they're buying that, is that if you launch a live service game, multiplayer game that doesn't have crossplay, cross save, what is it going to do that's so good that's going to pull people away from the path of least resistance? Right. If I can play with my friends where I'm at without having to sit here having an investment in any kind of hardware, why, you know, like, it's got to be so good. And it's not, because it's a live service game. Those don't get good until later. You know, so it's like, you're just going to be sitting here like, yeah, just play the game. We just want people playing the game. We don't care who you are or where you are. Player game.
Yeah. depending on the live service game, I could even see it landing on Xbox just to maximize sales and community. Yeah. Like, I could see that being a thing. They seem a little bit more comfortable with that reality than in the past. But I mean, your big iconic titles, that'll probably never be true. But live service games, I do think they will treat quite differently. And I think Destiny has opened their eyes to that idea about what kind of money could be made ongoing with games like that when they're everywhere. So we're gonna end there, because I know Ginger said in the DM he's got to go, and that was a little while ago. So guys, make sure and check out 30 and Still Gaming on YouTube, Ginger Prime, Ginger Radio, Ginger Quilting. He's got a lot of channels.
Sweet.
I have a lot of channels as well. We're getting ready to launch the Reforge Recycle channel, where I just recycle recyclable goods. But just kidding. Don't forget, we're here every Friday, but the day's not done for the Reforge folks. Tonight's a big night. We hit a great milestone with gifted membership. So my wife has to play Elden Ring tonight, and we even unlocked the cam. Like, she's going to be on cam with me playing Elden Ring. She's talked a lot of smack about that game. So if you're a member on Reforge Gaming, be there tonight. YouTube doesn't do a great job of putting members-only content in front of you, so make sure you're in the Discord, and make sure you're checking the channel itself. Mike and Ginger, you guys got anything? We'll start with Mike. Anything coming up next week? I know you do. Mike does his podcast every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, Generation X Gaming. Make sure and watch that. Outside of that, what have you been working on?
We've been covering the Obi-Wan series, and boy, has that been entertaining, let's just say, at least. Wednesday nights, we cover the Disney Plus, and we're doing a double Ms. Marvel and Obi-Wan this week. So we'll be doing episode 4 and episode 1 of Ms. Marvel, episode 4 of Obi-Wan. And the podcast on Thursday nights. We're live every single day from summer schedule is 10 to 2 now. So 10 o'clock in the morning to 2 p.m. And then also at night, 8 p.m. to midnight, basically. So Monday through Thursday.
All right. Ginger, what are you working on there?
I've been working on, I got a New World running on the Steam Deck. I got Final Fantasy 14 running on the Steam Deck. And so I put out my Steam Deck guide for Final Fantasy 14. And then essentially just kind of playing around with that. Just generally putting out my guides and my games, and obviously, like, we just reacted to the Final Fantasy 16 news, and so just doing what I do, covering the games that I like to talk about, and just kind of like having a good time. Also, I'm going to work and doing that as somebody who, like, I'm not a full-time content creator, so sit back and go program. That's what I do.
Great. Well, we hope to see a bunch of you tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, over on Reforge Gaming. That is the central hub of Reforge content, but we do come to Reforge Radio every day for the rundown, which is a rundown of the daily news, things that have been going on. And then we do the Reforge Roundtable every Friday around 3 p.m. Eastern with these handsome gentlemen. And we like to typically use the redirect to send you guys to a video to give it a little bit of love. So we do have a first look of one of the rifts in Diablo Immortal. If you miss my gameplay, it is on PC. I went into one of the rifts, tested it out. I match made with some people. So when this video ends, it's going to take you over there. Enjoy that gameplay, and then we'll see you back on Reforge Gaming tonight for my wife playing Elden Ring. Should be great. Should be hilarious. So thanks so much for watching, guys. We will see you next time.
Take care.